Llama llama red pajama. Mama llama says, "Where's my baby llama llama red pajama?" Hey there, shopper maniacs! You're listening to another episode of the 2K18 Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
2K18, I like it.
Dude, 2K18 is on fire. It's fire hot. Dude, coming at you live. All right, chat. Here we go. Listening. This is my live. This is my Twitch streamer chat voice chat. All right, here we go, chat. All right. Oh, man. What's happening, Chris? How are you practicing
my free rapping skills as well. So, you know, you're holding the baby walking around and you're just like, I just need to make sound, but I don't know what to, I can't remember the words to 600 songs.
Yeah.
Start making them up.
I started getting into some hip hop, some new hip hop, on the Spotify's. And, I learned about, it's all I've been thinking about, like in the background of my brain. It's just this song called Rolex, and it's like, I want a roly roly roly, I'm a diamond. You guys see this video where Luda Chris reads llama llama red pajama. I'm sending this to you, dude. It is the best. It's like Ludacris is like, llama llama red pajama, mama llama says, where's my baby llama llama red pajama. It's just awesome. Anyway, I've been like listening to all this music, and I found out about this guy called Lil Pump, and he's like a walking drugs, and it is just fascinating to me, Chris. He's 100% made of drugs, and it's weird to me, but hey, that's life. So
I love it. I suppose we could welcome our Spotify listeners, since we somehow magically got on that platform.
Yeah, the people at Simplecast, thank you, Simplecast, struck a deal with Spotify and got us on the old Spotify. So that's awesome.
Weird. It's almost weird that it's like a back door. I mean, isn't the definition of podcasting like it's just an RSS feed with an MP3 attached to it? Like, I wonder why Spotify cares to make it a hard to get into platform.
Yeah, I don't know why Spotify's like gatekeeping adding RSS feeds.
Maybe it's like Dribbble, you know, or they just want to make sure that quality stays high.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess like if you're like launching a service, you don't want just like, you know, Jeff's Apple podcast or something, you know. I don't know what the reasoning there is. So.
Anyway, we're on it. It took almost 300 episodes. But
yeah, we finally made it, team.
Now we're there, which is
so
cool.
If you use Spotify, subscribe, like, star heart, favorite up. That's how people find out about this show. Chris,
you do
guess
that
what
on
time?
Spotify? I suppose you can. Oh, you can, I like don't everything know. Else.
You can follow and, yeah. Yep, Spotify things. Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Guess what time it is? Magazine corner.
Oh, well, I remember last week. You asked me if I had the Wired about the numbers on it, and I was like, no, I don't think I got that one yet. And then I go home, and it's like sitting on my magazine or on my coffee table, clearly been read. I just didn't recognize what you're talking about. But yes, I did have that one. And that the lead article that week is, I guess it's the January 2018 one, is mm-hmm. super good. I thought it was.
But I read it because you were like, dude, we should talk about this. And I was like, well, okay, let's talk about this. And I read it. And do you want to give like a synopsis?
Well, kind of. I mean, the gist is that there's all these numbers that attach to you as a person that real world decisions are made around. And I guess the obvious one is like in the U.S., we have a credit score that are kept by three agencies or whatever. But the agencies exist just to give our person a body or a number in which that it's then determined like what kind of rates you get on loans or if you're even allowed to get a loan at all and stuff like that. So we're used to that one. Somehow we all got used to that one and have decided that one's okay. But there's all kinds of more numbers. There's probably dozens, hundreds maybe of numbers that, you know, of your name attached to a number that you don't even know about.
Yeah.
Which is wild. But the big new one that the meat of the article is about in China, where they kind of have taken it to new levels, both from the government itself and a lot from this, I probably will say it long, but Alipay or yeah, whatever, like, which is some massive thing over there in which that you pay for everything with, but it's also like a one app to rule them all. Like if you have, you could just have one app on your phone because it just does everything.
Yeah, it's like Alibaba and Alipay, and imagine Amazon is like, okay, hi, you want to buy a house? Cool, Amazon can set that up for you. We know your purchase history, how well you paid things off, so we can basically give you a credit score to buy a house or whatever.
What you buy, where you go, who your friends are. I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's scary just theoretically. But this is like, oh, no. Not only do we have that information, but we take it all into account and then literally display a number in your app, and that's your number. And it has real-world consequences, this number.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Both punishments and incentives, you know.
Yeah, because, like, if you have a low number, you pay for every, you pay a fee for, you know, everything. You pay a higher interest rate. But if you have a high number, they like give you free stuff. They're like, oh, no fees. Don't worry about it. Also, do you want like this or, you know?
And
like
if the government is doing it outside of, they have their own system for doing it, but it has the same kind of factors in it. It's literally like you get 50 points for helping an old lady across the street or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you have a low number because you've done bad things, you can be denied social services.
Oh, and you're friends with that scumbag? Oh, you don't get...
Oh, that was a whole other angle to it. Welfare. Was the friends thing. That was the craziest part about it, is that they almost publicly state that that's the case, that your number can be affected by who your friends are on this platform. So you're kind of incentivized to throw away, to cast out your low number friends and only have high number friends. And there's like secret chat groups to just like connect with only other high number people to go with. I mean, that's...
What do you think? So what do you think the moral implications are, because or how it can apply to us? I was kind of talked myself into a circle. You know, I was like, OK, all right, credit scores, those are fine. You know, like you need to kind of know how trustworthy or how someone can pay back something. And then I put it into tech and I was like, oh, like something like CodePen. OK, yeah, like. Let's give users a score. If they're a zero, they're probably just a spam account. Or if they're like, you know, 1,000, they're probably like a good, you know, traffic driver and stuff like that. And you probably want to give them free stuff.
Yeah, maybe we should send them a baseball
swag. Yeah, baseball hat. Like you want to like start rewarding them. And I was like, oh, shoot. I'm like one step away from like communist dictatorship. Ah, like what do you do? You know, like, I don't know the best.
It depends on how you use it. I think I guess that's a slippery slope kind of thing. But if the only reason you ever used it was to like internally to surface better content or something, because it just makes for a more interesting experience for everybody, that just kind of doesn't seem so bad. It's just like an algorithm to help identify good users and good content, and you use it to display that content and whatever. That seems fine. But it also seems like, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. But if you surface it and you show people that number, that all of a sudden that changes and has a different dynamic that you have to think
about. Now it's kind of gamification, because Dave Rupert wants that high number. You know what I mean?
True. And we've thought about this. We had like, you know, wouldn't it be cool to have like secret badges that you could earn? And I always thought, oh, I even put the word secret in front of that, but I shouldn't. But that was a twist we were thinking of putting on it, is that like you can earn the badges, but it's not entirely clear how you do it. So it's like intentionally a game.
Okay. So yeah. Like it's uncovering or like a,
yeah, how do you get this badge? Yeah. It's a little unclear how you do it, but maybe one of them would be like, oh, now you've made a pen that uses all three of the major JavaScript frameworks, you know, so you, or whatever, there's more than three, but you know what I mean? Oh, so you get the frameworks badge or something, but it wasn't entirely clear until you built that last pen, how you even got that badge kind of thing. That just seems like all in good fun, but there are implications to stuff like that. You know, does it feed people's addiction problems? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see, I mean, you know, sometimes I do think about my credit score, like miss like a car payment, not because like the money's in the bank, but I'm just like, I forget to pay it, Chris. I'm an idiot. So like, and I'm like, ah, the credit score, darn, that might come back to hit me, you know, like want to buy a house or something like that. And but no, it's, I don't know. It's kind
of interesting. There's other implications, like what if you get it wrong? What if something happened outside of the control, an edge case, and it impacted your score negatively, and there's no system to correct it? You might not even know this number exists, and you have a low one, which is impacting you poorly, and there's no, you don't know that it's there. There's no system for auditing it. There's no system for, you know, trying to fight it and be like, no, let me explain what happened here. This is different than that. You don't even know. If you can see the number, there's no way they're telling you exactly how they calculate it, because the point of the number is that it's secret and not being, can't be gamed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very tricky. Yeah. So is it always evil or not?
See, I don't know. I'm thinking in like the, like, oh, if you have a bad number, you can't use like Uber, like, or what is the Chinese one, Didi or something. But like you can't, like, services are being taken away from you if you have a bad credit score. That's, you know, but maybe America is just the same, you know, like there's things ultra rich people can do that I can't do. They can go to Mar-a-Lago or whatever. But
maybe,
like,
I'll read a quote from it to, you know, just,
yeah, juice it,
to set the stage a little bit. So the algorithm behind my Zima credit score, and the Zima, Z-H-I-M-A, is the little thing as part of Alipay that you open up and look at your number in, is a corporate secret. Ant Financial officially lists 5 broad categories of information that feed into the score, but the company provides only the barest details about how these ingredients are cooked together. Like any conventional credit scoring system, Zima Credit monitors my spending history and whether I've repaid my loans. But elsewhere, the algorithm veers into voodoo, or worse. A category called Connections considers the credit of my contacts in Alipay's social network. Characteristics take into consideration what kind of car I drive, where I work, where I went to school. A category called Behavior, meanwhile, scrutinizes the nuances of my consumer life, zeroing in on actions that purportedly correlate with good credit. Shortly after Zima's credit launched, the company's technology director, Li Yingyang, told the Chinese magazine Kexin that spending behavior like buying diapers, say, could boost one's score, while playing video games for hours on end could lower it. Online speculation has held that donating to charity, presumably through Alipay's built-in donation service, was good, but I'm not sure whether the $3 I gave to feed brown bear cubs qualifies me as a philanthropist or a cheapskate. Wow.
See, wow, man. Yeah, that's, to me, that's like kind of frightening. I don't know. Like, it seems to me like the rich will get richer, you know, in a system like this. Like just, or it's like, well, dude, if you just are a good person, you know, you're great. You'll have a great credit score. You get all these cool things. And it's like, well, what defines a good person? You know, this like arbitrary metric, you know, and that's maybe American individualism or something. But like, you know, like what?
Doesn't it change, you know, the dynamics of it if it's only for incentives? If there's nothing's ever taken away from you, but only if you get X points, do you get a bonus? Like, that changes the morality of it, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, well, and it also, you know, it's like, oh, if you listen to Fart Sound Podcast, you're out of here. It's like, oh, no, Shop Talk is sunk, you know? Like, how, you know, it can change things and persuade people and influence people.
I think a fascinating little aspect to this was the design itself. And there's no screenshots in here, so I'd like to see it. But it was described that, you know, when the author of this signed up, you start with a score of 550 in this Alipay thing, which is really bad and low, and it's your job to get it up. And when you look at your score, the design of that screen, it was like red and really bold things and gives you stuff like, you can do better, you know? Like, that's literally design. A designer designed that screen. And then as it goes up a little bit, the whole design of it softens up. It changes to like soft italics and the colors turn to like light blue, cloudy colors and stuff as your score gets better. So it's like the psychological aspect of all
UX.
That is, yeah.
It's like an amazing progressive UX, but it's also kind of manipulative. I don't know. I mean, but ideally you do want a good credit score. You know, I think everyone wants a good credit score, but when it's like based on like how good of a, you know, like, I don't know, it's don't know.
Well, I want a system in which that you're incentivized to help an old lady across the street and you're decentivized from punching the old lady in the face. On its surface, that looks great. But how do you know it's accurate? How do you know it's 1,000% accurate? How do you know somebody didn't just click the wrong button and give you negative 50 instead of upper 50? There's no insight into how all this works and no system for auditing it or correcting it.
Well, Chris, I think developers are pretty good at stuff. I don't ever write bugs, Chris, so I'm pretty sure everybody is in the same boat.
That's just that's why I like Wired, is they have, you know, they pretty consistently have good.
Yeah, this actually touched on a book I've been reading or just finished, The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt. I've talked about it before, but it's kind of this like idea that morality is coded into our systems, you know, and it takes a look at like conservative and liberal morality systems, basically based on this like framework. I really recommend the book if you're like kind of like frustrated with American politics. But one thing it kind of addresses is the free rider problem, which is just this idea like how if you're a society, think of like a small tribe or something, how do you address the person who's not carrying their weight, you know? Or if you think of it as a company, like what do you do about the person who isn't quite like doing, they're just coasting along. And you know, there's different like the liberal methodology is like, oh, well, we help them out, you know, give them money and try to prop them up so that they then start contributing. And then the conservative methodology is like, no, just like take away everything and let them, you know, let the free market decide their problems or whatever. But it's just interesting in this kind of whole Alipay thing is essentially that whole thing. So like my two reading worlds kind of connected, and it's interesting to think about, but I just don't know, man. Like at first I was reading the article and I was like, oh, this sounds reasonable. This sounds really, really logical. And then like by the end of it, I was like, I do not want Amazon to like be the determiner of whether or not I get a house loan, you know, Amazon plus these like social good factors. I just got too creepy.
Well, Amazon's a good way to put it, because it doesn't, little guys can't do this. You could give a number to people, but it only works the more data you have. I mean, the reason that it's such a big deal with Alipay or whatever it's called, you know, pronunciation wise, is that they have so much damn data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, they have everyone in their pocket.
I guess that's kind of what the circle was about too, wasn't it? Did you see that?
Anyway. I didn't see that. Is that a Black Mirror?
is that a Black Mirror? It's just a slightly longer Black Mirror episode.
Okay. That's on my list of shame. I need to do that. So, hey, Chris, got another magazine.
okay.
Best, 132 Secrets of the Most Productive People. This is week number 2. Here we go. We covered James Corden last week.
Yeah.
of course, who's number 1 in my productive people mind. This week comes from somebody I actually like and follow, is Donna Sarkar, the head of Windows Insider program at Microsoft. So she's the person who flights all your Windows Insider builds. So time she wakes up, 4 a.m., oh boy, whoa, that's very early. Donna, I'm just going to say Donna. And then so best habit. You want to know her best habit and her worst habit? Okay. Best habit: I'm not afraid to start something. I don't need to be good at something that I have never done before. I assume I am going to be very bad. I like that attitude. Worst habit: I am awake at all hours and have a lot of energy, which can be overwhelming to some people. That's right, Donna, you wake up at 4 a.m. And her productivity advice, Chris, is you should track your time every hour of the day, then consider whether what you are doing leaves you in a positive or negative mood, then do more of the things that bring you joy. So track your time, give it a smiley or a frowny, and do more in the smileys.
People want you to track your food. They want you to bullet journal. They want you to track everything. Too much tracking.
I like bullet journaling, but I just don't have the discipline. It's cool. It's a nice little habit. You like lay out your whole week or your month, and then you lay out the week, and then you like, it's cool. I like it. And Chris, I got one more magazine related thing. I was in the airport last week. Hey, and I almost bought a prepper magazine. Another one. I almost bought another prepper
magazine. That's going to kill your score.
Well, that's, I started worrying about, I was like, oh, maybe this will affect my score. Or maybe I'll get flagged on some government watch list, which means I've entered the prepper mindset, which is great, Chris. This is good for the show, I think. I now will have to buy my magazines either with Bitcoin or like cash, untraceable cash. I'll maybe dress up in outfits and only shop at night under the cover of darkness. So, all right. Well, that's all I got for the magazine.
I have a question about Bitcoin, which I'm sure, I don't know if you're, you know, the person to ask or not, but you're the person standing in front of me right now. Okay. You know, the history of it, right, is that Bitcoin was invented by, like, I don't know, didn't like some of the early people in Bitcoin just like get some of it for free, essentially, right? And then, but then all the rest of it was had to be mined to be created. So it kind of just like there was no, it was an ecosystem of money that didn't start with any other kind of money. But now it isn't these days when a new currency comes out, you have to like buy into it with real money. Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem, because then there's a decent chance that your real money turns into nothing because the currency never took off. So it's like, why don't they all just do exactly what Bitcoin did? Just have like a mining only, because then people aren't getting rich, right? Like isn't there some incentive to create a currency and try to convince people that this is the big next one, have them all buy the stuff with actual money, which you get, and then just stop caring about your currency because you're rich now.
Are you saying like people will value something, build a lot of buzz, generate cash out, and then start another thing that also does the same sort of...
I just saying the incentive is there, isn't it? Which seems backwards.
Yeah. I don't hate to call things Ponzi schemes, just throwing that around, but who knows? I've heard some stories, people driving Lamborghinis and stuff, but I don't know, man. I'm not the go invest in imaginary money person. So unfortunately, I'm just not that person. So one day maybe. You know, you can invite me to your yacht, though. I would love to talk about Bitcoins on your yacht. So,
sure.
Get it on. Hey.
So we are going to do more 2018 stuff. I don't know if you have anything. We also have some questions, too. Do you want to just get to?
Yeah. Well, 2K18, we kind of paused last week. What were our things? We were serverless was one, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to shove that down people's throat a little bit because I like it.
And workers, well, that was kind of like workers are basically serverless on the client, you know. And then CSS Grid, of course, you know.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't mention, and it like struck me as we like hit stop, was variable web fonts.
Oh,
variable fonts. You think that's on the
end? Okay. I think we've been tossing around the idea of doing a whole show on those. So maybe we are going to do that. I think.
Yeah, we'll do a show.
But what's
show
the
on
overview
that,
though? Like, why do you think they're so big?
I just think that this idea that you can, you include one font or two fonts on your site, but you have infinite weights and styles and italics and all that. Like, and it's all kind of coded very cheaply into the format. I just think that's amazing. You know, like right now you basically download a whole file for every weight and every style and they're maybe like 10% different, you know?
So the big thing for you essentially boils down to a perf gain because you...
Huge perf gain. When I was redesigning my site, I'm using Rubik on my site and I have the like 400 and the like 700 or 900 weight, I think. And I wanted the 700 for like bold text, like strong text, but I just couldn't justify it because it was like another 40K. But, you know, and so probably in total, I'm sending down, you know, 60K of fonts or something like that, or maybe 80K.
In the grand scheme of things, pretty light.
Yeah, but like if I could send down 40K, whoa, 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 like, I love that, you know, and just the I guess the penalty back to like incentives, disincentives, the penalty for adding a web font goes down dramatically. So you still have the same like Falk, you know, loading issues, but.
And I suppose you're sending less data and you get more design possibilities, not less.
Yes. Yes. Less data, more design possibilities. So that's what I really like about it. And, but yeah, we'll kind of plan a whole show about these things, 'cause they are just, I was really sold on them at CSS DevConf. I wanted them. I knew I wanted that feature when I was redesigning my site, but then I heard a talk on it and I just was like, I want it very much now. So I'm not even a designer. I'm just a developer, but I know the value of it, you know, just even from a perf standpoint, you know what I mean? So.
I mean, the perf is the most like immediately obvious, I think, benefit, and that's more clear now that they're starting to ship some fonts that we're already all familiar with. Like, isn't there like Open Sans or Roboto or something? It has one now. And then you're like, oh yeah. Before that I was impressed, but all the demos were like really fancy exotic fonts. You're like, wow, that's such a cool demo, but that really doesn't affect my day to day very much, you know? Whereas if you ship Open Sans variable, I'm like, oh dang, I can use that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can go to axis-praxis.org. But yeah, they've got some cool fonts coming in. So
it'll be interesting to see the first major implementation. Maybe it's already out there, but it needs a Boston Globe of variable fonts, you know.
Boston, everything needs a Boston Globe moment, you know. No, I'm very excited about this. I just think it's gonna get people very, very excited. Compressa is a condensed.
I think the excitement will be variable.
Variable. No, you can just it's a little font you can program with CSS. Think about it that way. It's great. So one thing to consider with this Meltdown Spectre stuff, all CPUs are like 20% slower. This is interesting to me. So. That's going to affect JavaScript on the main thread. So
we're just talking about a little bit about it at work, because we have, you know, we have loads of servers that power CodePen, and it's like, oh man, do we have to spin up more, or what's the implications of it? Does this make our bills 20% more expensive because we need 20% more of them?
Yeah, I saw some game actually. I think it was Fortnite. I think they saw a 20% spike in their server needs, like CPU utilization went up like 20%. So they had to pop more servers in. So it can get more expensive. I think it's going to have ramifications.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Rollbar. We love Rollbar. Rollbar.com/ShopTalkShow. One of the most frustrating things that we all deal with is dealing with errors in our apps. So like, relying on users to report those errors, searching through log files to debug what's wrong, not ideal. With Rollbar, you instantly know what's broken and why, so you can reduce all the time you spent debugging and figuring all that stuff out. It's just fantastic. Rollbar detects when code breaks in real time and provides the full stack trace and diagnostic data to help you find these errors and deal with them. And it integrates into your workflow naturally, because you can have it send your alerts right to Slack or HipChat or whatever, or create a new issue in Jira or Pivotal Tracker or Trello or whatever you use, which is fantastic. Adding it to your app, the SDK, super easy, just a few lines of code. And if you're a JavaScript person, check these out. Two features that are clutch. One is source maps, so you can ship minified code to production, of course, you know, for performance, that's important. But as long as your source map is there, you can still get a good, meaningful stack trace, because Rollbar will use your source map, which is great. Another one is telemetry, even more amazing telemetry. It gives you a timeline of events leading up to the error. It's like a black box recorder for when your web app crashes. So like, great, I have the error, but what was happening leading up to that? I don't know. But Rollbar does, and can tell you with the telemetry feature, which is great. Go to rollbar.com/shopdocshow to sign up. Get the Bootstrap plan for free. It's used at places like Heroku, Twilio, Kayak, Zendesk, Twitch. You're in good company using Rollbar. Give it a shot. All right, let's do some questions. Do some 2K18 questions.
All right, fresh off the 2K18 question hopper.
Hey guys, this is more of a general question for you all. This new year, I want to start getting into contributing to open source projects like I've tried to do in the past. However, my lack of expertise is holding me back since I'm nervous my inexperience will hurt any project I contribute to rather than helping to the cause. What is your advice for novice developers like me who are looking to submit their first pull requests while meaningfully contributing to projects? How do you keep a contributing rhythm going? And how does one find open source projects that are open to junior web developers like myself? Thank you.
I think that's like an FAQ of the internet. I hear this asked an awful lot. And I don't know. we can probably dish out a little advice, but I don't know if there's a super perfect answer to this. But one being your own attitude and that my inexperience will hurt any project I contribute to, I would not worry about that. I mean, I think I don't think the chances of you doing a pull request that just like ruins a project is pretty low. Of course, there's things you can do that are just fixing an actual mistake. You know, find an actual bug in it and fix the bug, and it's not worse, it's better, you know? Of course, there's like, are you well-versed in how pull requests work? If you're not, and you're trying to get even just to that point, that's probably a good first step by just doing stuff like fixing typos and things. I don't mind getting pull requests like that. Not that I'm the maintainer of any big open source project or anything, but if somebody were to send me a PR with a typo fix, I would just click the button and give them a high five, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like it's going to take a bit of hunting on your part. I think like don't just be like, I'm going to Google needs help and start helping. You know, I think you have to start with something in your wheelhouse, like what's something you use, what's something.
What's the motivation here exactly? Like, I just want to help anybody on anything. That seems pretty noble, but it's like maybe you should scope that to something that you already care about to some degree, you know. Seems like spending your time working on something that you care about is going to have a lot more legs than just this generic need to contribute.
Yeah. Charlotte is on Twitter, has a site called Your First PR. And that might be a good place to start. Like, it's just kind of this, like, you hit up Your First PR on Twitter or follow them, and they have, like, good, like, here's a first contributor, here's some docs. A lot of times it's docs, but, a lot of people just want to write tests. I know for me, it's like, I know it needs to be done. I just don't want to do it. Or like somebody like download this and or like, you know, fork this, download the fork or the patch and just tell me it works. Like, give me like a, hey, this actually works. But please don't do that on my repos.
I know we probably talk about this one too much, but you know, we both had access to the, and you do most of the work on it, but like Fitvids or something, somebody could hop into Fitvids and say, oh, I see how it automatically detects YouTube and Vimeo videos. I'm going to have it support like 90 more video embed companies. That would be a bad PR. Cause we're like, no, we like philosophically decided not to do that because there's the way that you use this plugin takes a selector that you can just pass the ones to, and it's not really practical to have a library that the whole world uses that's looking for 90 different video providers. And so, like, how do you know? That's just one example, but it's an example of a philosophical thing that we're opposed to. So how would you know, just doing a random PR, what the general philosophy of that project is? I think that's impossible to wrap your mind around unless you're the owner of that thing. I mean, maybe should that be a part of more readmes is our philosophy.
Yeah. I read this article. I wish I knew the title of it but it just came through my feed and I more skimmed it than read it. But, it was kind of like, don't look to be like building out features. Like look for patches, you know, like how can I fix something or make it a little better or something. Don't be like, oh, well, I'm going to add, you know, a jetpack to this repo because it just needs it. You know, don't try to do that sort of stuff just because it, That's a lot of work for the maintainer, and it was maybe not on their roadmap. So now they kind of have to like evaluate this whole new feature, and they're like, oh, I don't know if we want to commit to that. So, you know, it helps to like, if you like find something you're interested in, you know, find a piece of software you use all the time and, you know, go into the GitHub and just read the issues. This is something I picked up from like a Ruby, a Substack. I think it was Substack, but he just, maybe he does Node now or Couch or something, but like you jump into the issues and you just like read through the issue queue. And then by the end of it, you'll kind of like kind of understand the problems that this, repo is having. And then you can maybe even make recommendations like, oh, hey, looks like this is a duplicate of number 548. Like maybe we should merge the, you know, maybe you could merge these together and, you know, we could work on a test or something for it. But I think that's kind of the, like the way to go about it. So yeah, I think like, yeah, that's something you can do.
I like that. Be the triager. I'm sure there's lots of projects that could highly use that.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't seem like everybody's favorite task, but to some people that probably seems like a good time.
Well, if you want to be a valuable contributor, you like have like you understand the problems something has. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, because usually what I would say is 90% of all open source projects, like all the problems are just existing in the maintainer's brain. Like they're just lingering, right, with no mind share. And so if they just get stressed out and peace out, they're gone, you know? Yeah. So I would say,
what about all these projects out there that are just, they're abandoned anyway. You know, like if you find the perfect repo, there's also no, you should probably look at like the history of it, the commits, because it's like if there hasn't been a commit in 2 years, you better know that person is peaced out.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know sometimes. It's one that was killing me recently was the Twitter has a library called Type Ahead that's like for, you know, you type DAV and it looks in mm-hmm. some data source and fills out Dave Rupert for you. You know, it's just useful for all kinds of stuff, and it's super abandoned. You know, which I feel like reflects a little weirdly on the Twitter dev team. It's like, I know none of you are individually responsible for it, but somebody, an engineering manager at Twitter, has got to see projects like this lingering, and they should just shut them down or sunset them or put a note in the README that says, sorry, the person who's working on this has left. It's kind of sunset. There happens to be a fork of it over here that's more maintained, but it's really hard to find because, of course, when you web search around, everything leads right to the
namespace. Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a mess, and there's 2 million issues on it. And it's like, why even bother adding more? Because they ain't going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That came across as more ranty. This is like, I get having to step away from projects. It's fine.
Yeah. No, I think it's like all about like helping the maintainer. If you want to help and contribute to an open source project, help a maintainer by jumping in and helping out. I've had two.
It's a good signal is if they ask. I saw the library Axios published a really clear letter that was just like, we need help, please.
Yeah.
So look at
yeah,
that.
No.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, Webpack, you know, I know they were like, we need money actually, so we can put somebody on this full time, you know, and same with like Preact and stuff like that. Like sometimes people just need like paid attention, you know. I'm not saying you should just pay money, but really like it helps to like mind share. I've had two situations. Ken Howard has helped out with Fitbids. He like came in and just was like, I'm going to like master this issue queue. Really helped out there. Scott Vinkel and Joe Watkins on the accessibility project had like jumped in, and I think Eric Bailey's also doing stuff, jumped in, really helped out there. It's been like way more active than it ever was under my administrative authority. It's happy. And I mean, it's maybe not good or like maybe opens me up to a future problem, but I will very quickly, like if somebody looks like eager to help, I'm like, okay, you can like be an admin on the project because this is great. You know, you're really helping, you know? So that's cool. But you know, again, don't use my projects, go find somebody else. I think there's places to help. I think it's find something you use, find something you kind of, you know, every like plugin or whatever you use, you're like, oh, I wish it did one more thing, or like, it's, this is kind of hard, or this is buggy, or, you know, like, I think, you know, I think that's like a good, great place to start. So, all right.
Good luck, Griffin. We have one here from Oliver Williams saying, asking if, do you have a preferred prototyping tool? I recently started trying out Framer, but I'm not, but there's a lot to it, and I'm not entirely convinced it's quicker and easier than just making a prototype in the browser with real code. So that's his question. He's just trying out Framer. Have you seen Framer? I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's like lush, like animations. It's kind of like its big thing, and it's kind of moving into like a full design tool. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think like it went through some changes where it was like just code, not quite just code, but like that was, it was heavily like, this is for prototyping animations with a CoffeeScript-like syntax kind of thing that's designed to be easy. And then, and now, like, the latest revision of it is very much like, that's still there, don't worry, but it's putting more emphasis on the design side of it, you know, which is, you know, drawn rectangles, you know? I know there's more to it than that, but like, that's how I'll think of all these tools, is just elaborate rectangle drawers, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that sums it up. Sometimes you round the corners on the rectangle enough to make a circle. So, yeah, no, I think it's good. For me though, I like Framer's great. Don't want to take anything away from it, but for me, it's all about code prototypes. CodePen is my key prototyping tool. You can use that on your website, Chris. That's a blurb. You can put that blurb there. I use CodePen. I use the SHIT out of it. So for me, like, there's so many reasons to use code prototypes, and Framer does have code. So I'm kind of, don't want to like, again, that like there's a fine line there, but for me, like, code prototypes are the only way you can put it on a real device and you can start seeing the problems, because all the problems happen over the network connection, over, you know, your phone, with heart, you know, Meltdown Spectre patches plus low battery has turned on.
I get why there's so much pushback between why aren't design tools, why are they always like, okay, we got this far, now let's rebuild it with code? Why can't designers work in the same medium that the rest of us work in? I think there's been a number of good, like, think pieces about this, and people that are just like, oh my God, why is this disconnect still here? This is insane. And I think maybe that's a 2018, or maybe even for the rest of this decade, kind of solving that disconnect. And I think it will be solved ultimately. I think getting a design tool that really is closer to the final product is a big deal.
Yeah. One thing I kind of heard, you know, I don't know if you've used Unity, Chris, but Unity is kind of an amazing example, because when in Unity, you're dragging your assets into the scene, you know, and then you open up an editor, a text editor, and you write some C#, and then you hit save, and then your video game is running inside the thing. Like your design tool and your code tool are married, and they work together, and they build a thing. Now, you know, yes,
awesome.
You're not always like hooked up to a database and sucking down blog posts and stuff like that in a video game. So it's maybe like a little bit different, but that the idea of it being married is so so interesting. Like,
I've seen a number of other tools. I mean, maybe this is the one I've seen, but there's been a number of takes on it that end up being like, yeah, you can design in here, and then it makes literal components for you to use in your final web app, which is that thing that we're looking for. That, but for some reason, they end up all being in React, or like the output for this.
If you like React.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, I like React, but why, you know, is that conversion process at the end so difficult to make for other things? I don't know.
You know, I think it comes down to React's component model. It makes highly portable components, you know, and you know, pretty isolated components, and you just can move one thing to another. That's like why I want web components, is so I can do that, but without the React dependency, you know. And I know there's Vue, there's Angular, but yeah, I'm using Angular on a project, and I like Angular, but it is like four files. It's like the test file, the CSS file, the HTML file, and the JS file. You know, like there's you know, multiple files that kind of go into a component. I like that model, but I wish there was like a web component where it was all one file.
One other plus one for Vue, isn't it? How they rock those single file components.
Yep. That's what
I have a couple of bugs, not bugs, but like user feedback thing I need to deal with on CodePen. That's the framework I've used the least, unfortunately, is Angular. And, you know, Angular 2 was a lot different than Angular 1. My knowledge scope, right? Like it changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's Angular 5 or whatever it is. I don't know how different Angular 2 is from 5, but I think they're a little bit in the same wheelhouse. But that's kind of the deal, right? Is you have all these, you have multiple files that end up being one component. And so people are like, why is Angular 1 still in the CodePen dropdown? And it's like, I think because like, I don't know, a lot of people still use Angular 1 because it's like a different beast than the other two, and using Angular 5 in the pen editor doesn't make a lot of sense because you don't have multiple files in which to even make us one component, let alone many components, you know? So I'm trying to figure out, is there a way to use Angular 5 in the pen editor that makes sense and we should offer it there or not, or what?
Tricky. I think you could, I think the big part of Angular 5 is actually the CLI. It's all about like a CLI tool now, and it has been before, but it's a way more kind of like Ember or something like that, where you just like spin up new components and, you know, and again, it's kind of the folder structure, you know, is the strength of Angular, like almost like Rails. When you open a Rails project, even if you've never been in the Rails project, you know where everything is, you know, like, you know, when you open an Angular project, it's the same thing. You like know the structure of things and where things live, where, you know, there's services and services have their own folder. There's, you know, components and they have their own folders. So it's very structured, just like a Rails project, you know, compared to like a React project where you jump in and it's like, no idea, like how these stitch together. They just a bunch of require foo at the top, and you know, I'll just dig into what requires what and hopefully understand it later. So so there you go.
Okay.
I don't know that it would been you should add it, I mean, if you can cheaply, but I don't know if there's a huge bennies to in the CodePen editor, in the pen editor, other than what,
yeah, you know? I hate to admit that that's sometimes embarrassing for me to admit that this product decision is being made by somebody like me, who's an idiot, but believe me, I'll get informed before we make
this. Not an idiot. You're an entrepreneur. So.
Well, just to cap off Oliver, I'd say, yeah, Framer's cool, you know, but it's exists in that same world where once you're done, you kind of got to rebuild it in a way. You may take a look at Webflow, which is kind of interesting because it's designed to not be a prototyping tool, but an actual like create the whole website tool. But then you're on Webflow. It's not really designed to be exported and used elsewhere. I am a big fan of Sketch, you know, but it's only a Mac thing. So that can be an issue. I would think if you like Sketch or like the idea of it, that Figma is very worth checking out. I think Figma is pretty great, and it works in the browser and has native apps, so you know, kind of everybody can use it. And I like that idea that projects have URLs and you share them, and you know, there's no file organization to worry about because it's just within the app, and it has team functionality that's pretty good. And Figma's damn nice.
Yeah. And the one thing I would say about prototyping, anything you do, prototypes need to be fast and cheap. And if it's not fast and cheap, it's not a prototype. Da, da, da.
Cool. And, and then just make sure to look at the InDesign one when it comes out too, I think is going to be a big deal. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Daddy. That's DADI.cloud. It's a global
decentralized cloud services platform, like in the vein of AWS or Google Cloud Platform or Microsoft Azure or whatever, but not them. That would be a centralized platform. This is a decentralized platform, bringing control of the internet back to the people. You even pay for it with a cryptocurrency based on blockchain like Bitcoin, or more accurately in this case, Ethereum. There's a crowd sale coming up for the initial offering of this, these daddy tokens, literally what you use to pay for these cloud services. It's coming up. It's the fastest growing crowd sale on Telegram, which is pretty darn cool. You can register for the crowd sale at daddy.cloud, of course. Again, it's decentralized hosting for web services, brings control of the internet back to the people, works in support of net neutrality. The technology is already there. It already exists. It's already powering over 200 websites and probably most significantly, it's up to 90% cheaper than other centralized platforms like AWS and Google Cloud Platform and all that stuff. So it's a lot cheaper and it's a lot decentralized. So if you're picking infrastructure for a new thing, this feels a lot like the future. It's faster because of the, you know, the distributed nature of the network, which is pretty darn cool. Over 25,000 people are already registered to be investors as part of this public sale. Check it all out at daddy.cloud.
We got one more here, and we were going to wrap it up because people said they liked the shorter shows, so we're going to do the shorter shows until people say other things. But Old Man Polly writes in, Old Man Polly, good to see you again. I was wondering if there's a good online community you guys recommend for web development, the place where you can ask questions and get the kind like the kind you get on the show and have meaningful conversations. I find Twitter is a place for venting and yelling and not very helpful. That is my opinion too. Slack, HipChat, Facebook. What kind of communities do you have?
Right. Twitter is getting harder to have like great, I don't know, web development conversations on. I don't know if it ever was perfect for that, but I don't know. Certainly there is a bunch of public Slacks that you can join that might be better in that way. But as soon as it's a public Slack, then I don't know. Is there still an overlord of that Slack who, you know, like it's almost like, God, do you have a group of friends already? Maybe you should start your own Slack.
Yeah, I've wandered into a few Slacks, you know, and then they kind of die out if they don't have a mission or, you know, or like there's an accessibility Slack, A11Y Slack or something, and it's really great. It's just I don't want to, like, I'm not like 100% accessibility, so I just kind of like glaze over and just kind of peace out. I'm in like an A-frame Slack because I like A-frame, but a lot of these stuff is like I just really ignore it because it doesn't, you know. But I'm in a few Slacks. I got work Slacks and try to talk with people there. That's kind of a good place for learning, you know. Stack Overflow is still probably the best community to learn, you know, to like ask questions and stuff like that. But you don't really get a lot of real-time conversation.
Are you in any Discord things?
I got some Discords, but that's all for gaming for me. But I like Discord a lot.
It's like, I don't know, it's almost just as good as Slack, if you ask me. It's got a pretty better. Yeah.
It's better.
It's pretty darn nice. Yeah, I joined, here in Bend, there's Bend.js, which I've joined their Discord, and it's pretty nice little local community. And I'm pretty
You know what a lot of like video gamer Slacks do is like you'll like join the channel, you know, but then like to post your like streamer, your Twitch streams, you know, you got to be a Patreon, you know. So like I would love a Discord where like everyone's in there, but if you want to self-promote, you have to be a paid member to be a self-promoter, you know, like to like post in the self-promotion channel or whatever. And you can't like do here's and at channels until you're like a paid member or something like that. Oh, I would love that. So that's
where does the money go?
To DaveRippertLLC.com. Oh, nice. And so, yeah, dude, that's where it goes, straight to me. It's supports my lifestyle, my community engagement, evangelism, developer relation. So
Ruby needs a new pair of shoes, buddy.
Yeah, dude, gotta get Ruby. Ruby needs rubies. Emmy needs a few dozen more purses and baby dolls. So no, that's, oh man. But yeah, no, I think that would be kind of, for me, it's just like buy-in, you know, it's like, if you're going to like steal people's attention, like you should have to pay for it. And that's maybe the big fault of Twitter. It's just turned into this like self-promotion machine slash, you know, like, you know, less about sharing, more about like blasting, you know, your thoughts and stuff. So less about conversation, more about blasting. And I don't know. I'm on Mastodon right now, Chris, on mastodon.social. Mm-hmm. It's a very lonely, quiet place, but I've been having some good conversations there. I think it's interesting. It just is. It's a calmer community, so you might want to try that. But slow and boring, and people quit posting at about 7 o'clock, and it gets really boring. And I just turn off my phone, and my phone doesn't work anymore. So, or like, I just don't need my phone anyway. It's kind of actually relaxing. So
I totally understand the position, though. It's a, you know, if you're part of no communities, that feeling of loneliness and how, you know, increasingly difficult it feels to find one. So, and just say yeah, good luck, and they're out there, and maybe you can attempt to make your own.
Yeah, no, I think like find some groups, find some interest groups, you know, open source repos kind of have Slacks and stuff like that. Yeah. So go forth and just wander, be a wanderer on the internet. So, all right. Well, cool. Old Man Polly, hope that helps. And you, dear listener, thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. We're on Spotify now. So if you like Spotify, go hit that follow button in Spotify. We really appreciate that. If you want to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show, we tweet tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs, get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, oh, I got a special announcement. I started another podcast with my friend Yan Wang. It's called Aside Quest, and it's a pun on the aside element, but it's about it's a video game podcast for people who are too busy to play video games. So it's like, it's going to be like 15 minute stand up basically every week. Jan and I, like, what games did you play? What games are you going to play? Any blockers? Basically, that's the format of the show. Yeah, a stand up about weekly stand up about video games, and kind of trying to blast through our Steam queues, basically. Like, our we have like 40 games, hundreds of games in our Steam queue. I'm gonna try to blast through some of that, Switch games, DS games, iPhone games, any kind of games. So if you're interested in that, we're Aside Quest. AsideQuest.simplecast.fm. You can subscribe there, and we're on iTunes, and you can use the RSS feed for any other one of those podcatchers. So anyway, shameless self-promotion there, but yeah, check it out. And Chris, should you got anything else?
Should open the show with that next week. You know,
give people- all right, I'll do that again. Because people kind of skip over this part, and where we tell every week where we tell our deepest, darkest secrets, you know, people just peace out and they miss all this golden content, you know. Anyway, all right, Chris, anything else you'd like to say?
ChopTalkShow.com.